My reading this morning is called At the River Clarion by Mary Oliver. I don't know who God is exactly, but I'll tell you this. I was sitting in the river named Clarion on a water-splashed stone, and all afternoon I listened to the voices of the river talking. Whenever the water struck a stone, it had something to say. And the water itself, and even the mosses trailing under the water. And slowly, very slowly, it became clear to me what they were saying. Said the river, I am part of holiness. And I too, said the stone. And I too, whispered the moss beneath the water. I've been to the river a few times before. Don't blame the river that nothing happened quickly. You don't hear such voices in an hour or a day. You don't hear them at all if selfhood has stuffed your ears. And it's difficult to hear anything anyway through all the traffic and the ambition. If God exists, he isn't just butter and good luck. He's also the tick that killed my wonderful dog, Luke. Said the river, imagine everything you can imagine and then keep on going. Imagine how the lily, who may also be a part of God, would sing to you if it could, if you would pause to hear it. And how are you so certain anyway that it doesn't sing? If God exists, he isn't just churches and mathematics. He's the forest. He's the desert. He's the ice caps that are dying. He's the ghetto and the Museum of Fine Arts. And if this is true, isn't it something very important? Yes, it could be that I am a tiny piece of God, and each of you too, or at least of his intention and his hope, which is a delight beyond measure. I don't know how you get to suspect such an idea. I only know that the river keeps singing. It isn't a persuasion. It was all the river's own constant joy, which was better by far than a lecture, which was comfortable, exciting, unforgettable. Of course, for each of us, there is daily life. Let us live it gesture by gesture. I pray for the desperate earth. I pray for the desperate world. I do the little each person can do. It isn't much. Sometimes the river murmurs. Sometimes it raves. Along its shore were, may I say, very intense cardinal flowers and trees and birds that have wings to uphold them. For heaven's sakes, the lucky ones. They have such deep natures. While I sit here in a house filled with books, ideas, doubts, hesitations, and still pressed deep into my mind, the river keeps coming, touching me, passing by on its long journey, its pale, infallible voice singing. Lively, thoughtful, articulate, deeply engaged, grounded is how I describe this teacher as I listen and watch how the room is captivated by this 87-year-old ecologist. Joanna Macy is an adjunct professor at Starr King, where I am a student, and I've had the pleasure of being in her classes. She says that our ecological crisis is fueled by an insatiable economy that uses our earth as supply house and sewer, and that we are racing to see how quickly materials can be extracted from the earth and turned into consumer products. Joanna Macy, author, environmental activist, and Buddhist, says we are currently at a point between what she calls the great unraveling, which is planetary destruction, and the great turning, which is a shift from an industrial growth society to a life-sustaining civilization. She said she doesn't know which way it's going to go, but she has some advice on how to tip the scales toward the life-sustaining great turning. And I'm going to share those with you. She has 6 points. First, she says, love the world with all your heart. Cultivate a wild love for the world that unleashes ingenuity, creativity, and moral courage. We will never be able to build what we have not first cherished in our hearts. And number two, come from gratitude. To be alive in this beautiful, self-organizing universe, to participate in the dance of life with senses to perceive it, lungs that breathe it, organs that draw nourishment from it, is a wonder beyond words. It is a privilege to be alive in this time when we can choose to take part in the self-healing of the world. Number three, she says, do not be afraid of the dark. These are dark times, filled with uncertainty and suffering. Do not be afraid of the anguish you feel, also the fear, the anger, for these are responses that arise from the depth of your caring and the truth of your interconnectedness with all beings. Number four, dare to vision. Out of this darkness, a new world can arise. Not to be constructed wholly by our minds, so much as to emerge from our dreams. We are called to let the future into our imaginations. And number five, she says, roll up your sleeves. Many of us do not get involved because there are so many different issues that seem to compete with each other. But all aspects of the current crisis reflect the same underlying issue, setting ourselves apart and using others for our gain. So to heal one aspect helps the others to heal as well. Link up with others. You will spark each other's ideas and sustain each other's energy. And finally, her sixth point, act your age. She said, every particle in your body goes back to the first flaring forth of space and time. You are really as old as the universe. When you show up to lobby or protest or stand up for your diverse and multi-species community, do it in the full authority of your 15 billion years. Thank you, Joanna. I was once asked to describe God. I closed my eyes to check in with myself, and I was amazed at how quickly and clearly the image came to my mind. It was a forest. The trees were maple and beech, hemlock and white pine. There was a dappled path leading through it. I could smell the sun-warmed pine needles. I could hear a wood thrush and the sound of water flowing. I recognized the spot. It's an ordinary bit of quiet woods that I walk through from my house down to the Grass River. I've walked that path hundreds and hundreds of times. I love those woods and how it feels to be part of them, but I hadn't realized that that was my vision of God. I wanted to ponder that a while. Not far from that spot, behind a wonderfully rotting oak log, is where two lady slippers return and bloom every June. And over the creek, in a small shady grove, I harvest the wild leeks in April. They're the first greens, and I eat them with every meal for their short season. And then down at the river, on the bank, there's a beaver lodge, where I once saw a beaver pull a tremendous leafy limb into the entrance and disappear with it. Just down the path, there's an open hilltop that is perfect for watching stars, laying on a blanket and being amazed. This is where I raised my daughter, built my house. This is where I invite my friends. This is where I followed that barred owl in the cold February moon shadow from tree to tree deep into the night. I do find it easiest to feel connected to life with a sense of purpose and contentment while I'm in the woods. It feels holy, sacred, ordinary. I feel secure and that I belong. This place that came to my mind, this God, is home. It's a portion of woods I know by heart. If God is sacred home, if God is the connections and relationships made with the place and all of its humble and soaring inhabitants, then we can be sure we're never separate from God. But what about when we dishonor those relationships? What about when we forget our connections with a place and all that live there? This is the foundational misunderstanding at the core of our environmental crisis. We forget our place in this intricately interconnected sacred whole, this finely woven web, this wonderfully formed planet Earth. We think we are separate. We think our actions do not affect everything else. It is this belief that we are apart from the world we live in that causes us so many problems. In our busy lives, rushing from house to car to climate-controlled office, in the subway, in the city streets, when we stop for a grande cappuccino and a prepackaged turkey club, we forget. We forget that this planet feeds us and quenches our thirst and provides all the resources for all the things we use and own and wear and discard. I am not going to list all the bad news, all the ways that we don't care for this planet, all the ways that as humans we abuse this planet. We know the bad news. We've heard it. We're inundated with it. I do hope you will forgive me this one impactful and difficult quote from an Orion magazine article written by Melanie Thon. She says, "Days after the fires of Chernobyl, as whirling winds carried radioactive particles to Poland, Germany, Austria, Romania, Switzerland, France, Belgium, India, England, Greece, Israel, Canada, Kuwait, Japan, Turkey, America, as radioactive rain fell on Waterford, Ireland, as thousands of poisoned reindeer in Scandinavia were oh so mercifully slaughtered and buried, the people of this planet learned every particle of rain touches the face. Everyone on Earth is ours." If we remembered daily how deeply we are connected to everything else, if we remembered this sacred relationship, I wonder how we would live then. I am thinking about Joanna Macy's suggestions as ways to remind ourselves daily when we make our choices. To first love the world with all our hearts, cultivating this wild love and building what we have first cherished in our hearts. Amplifying gratitude, to be alive in this world, to move among it, to breathe it, to see it, and to feel it is a profound and wondrous gift. Honor the depth of your caring and the truth of your interconnection. Invite in the feelings that you feel, no matter how difficult. Let the future into your imagination. Find what you love to work on and take joy in doing that. Join with others to make a difference. And live in the full authority of your 15 billion years. And I have two more things to add to Joanna's suggestions. Nurture your relationship with all that is. Connecting with nature is not a hobby, it's not extraneous, it's not a guilty pleasure. By going out into it, or sitting at your window observing and appreciating it, you own the responsibility and the right to this deeply fulfilling, absolutely essential relationship. And pay attention. Be mindful of what you put into the web, how you care for these delicate and sturdy strands, and make sure your contributions are what you want them to be. My prayer for us is that we spread our own branches, our own wings, our own roots out into this world of ours and choose to have the full experience of being a part of it. That means celebrating it, mourning it, honoring and revering it, knowing that the spirit of life itself, love and God, is in every microorganism, every plant, every animal, every human, every stream and mountain, every raindrop that touches the face. So may it be.